Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libation.
Yeah.
It is almost the end of the Lenten road, or I guess, depending on how you're marking the days, the official end of the Lenten road as we are into Triduum.
Sure.
It is Good Friday as we record this, the waning hours of Good Friday. And if you're new to the program, welcome. You're joining us at like the most perfect time to talk about like death and sadness. And
yeah.
All that fun stuff.
Hey, guess it's always darkest before the dawn.
Oh, Christ. I knew you were going to drop that at some point.
Welcome to Church Drunk.
So, also, if you're new to the program, you may be picking up on the fact that our humor tends to a bit blasphemous, heretical, sacrilegious at times, everything but reverent. So if that's not your cup of tea, then go, you know, steep somewhere else.
Be sad elsewhere, yeah.
We also tend to be a bit cursy from time to time, so be warned. I am Guess, as you have already gathered, thanks to my co-host dropping it on
you.
Hey. With Diz. And Dizzy, we always start with the question of, what are you drinking?
Yes. Well, this evening I'm drinking a, for me, bitter ale. Yeah. It is an IPA, and it was in steel barrels, so it has a steel name. So it's the Steel Share IPA from a little place called Plow.
Lovely.
And I thought that was good for a Seder-ish evening.
Totally. Yeah. I actually thought about being like, you know, just drinking salt water.
I actually wished I had the ingredients to make the bitter tears that I highlighted last week, but this is good enough. What about you? What are you sipping?
These are strange times, Diz. Mm-hmm, you know, we kind of get by with whatever we can. So I'm drinking a black lager. You know, it's one of my favorites, which
Dark
is
night.
Not very Good Friday-ish to go with one of my favorite kinds of beer. Black lagers are delicious. I like them when I can get my hands on them. There's a variety of different styles or different ways of approaching it, but always a tasty brew. But I feel like, you know, black lager for a very black day of remembrance and whatnot. It's very Good Friday-ish to have a black lager, I feel like. So
yeah, you're on point.
That's what I went with.
Nice.
So we're in the midst of Triduum, we're talking once again remotely as we do this little thing that we usually do side by side, and here we are connecting.
Pandemic continues.
And we both also have been, we've talked about the fact that, like, you know, digital mass and streaming mass and things like that are not really our cup of tea, and yet as Triduum drew closer and closer, and it was like, well, I do love the celebrations of Triduum, right? I love Thursday mass when I can go. I'm not always able to make it happen. And then, of course, you know, some sort of remembrance or observance of Good Friday, followed by an Easter vigil if you got it in you to be able to kind of hang through that, which I used to. And then I had a baby guess, and it was like, ooh, the vigil might not be on the table for a little while.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, like as we started continuing to tick off the sort of shelter in place days, it was like, oh, we are really going to have to do these high holy days remotely. And it's weird.
Yeah, it's, I think this is where it feels the saddest to me church-wise. You know, all the other Sundays in Lent, you know, you can cobble it together, do your own thing. It's a bit of a relief maybe. Like I definitely didn't feel compelled to stream any of those masses. But we did try to watch a Holy Thursday one together with a few folks, and it, you know, it was fine. It just makes you think about what you're not experiencing, kind of.
Yeah, like, you know, I think that it, you know, like I think about like how much of a bummer of a time it must be for the priests who are, you know, trying to stream these masses and probably really missing their communities. You know, like they don't have, you know, spouses and children and families that they necessarily stay really closely connected to. Some of them do, you know, their siblings and parents and things like that, but some of them don't. And the idea is that their church community is supposed to be their family, and now they don't get to celebrate these days with them.
Yeah, it's sad for everyone. It's a rough, I mean, it can't be fun for them either. Not that it needs to be fun, but to be there like celebrating by yourself, like that's just like a sad birthday party, you know. It's like you're just like, I'm here together by myself. I don't know. I think during that Holy Thursday one that we were streaming, I actually thought a lot about the vigil. Because I'm like, that is kind of the one that I so love of all the, like, special liturgies of the church year. Like, the Easter vigil is unusually symbolic and beautiful. And I'm like, that one will be really rough. Yeah. Rough for them to do on their own. I think out of all the people who are going to, like, think that they're joining the church at this time, and like, what are they like?
Well, right, how are you going to do that?
You can't baptize. It must just be put off.
Yeah, they must be postponing them. But yeah, like, I hadn't even thought about that. The fact that people have been going through like a year long process of preparation, and now they're not going to be able to have it be the Easter vigil that is their welcome to the church. That sucks.
I mean, like, we don't do a lot like super great. Like, we don't do everything really well, but like, I feel like we do Easter vigil really well.
We do. And I think the whole thing has kind of made me look, you know, having streamed that Holy Thursday Mass and having, you know, like Good Friday, I've always kind of like bounced back and forth. Like, sometimes I do a communal celebration, but oftentimes it's that I do, you know, personally to go do whatever. And, but like, there are, you know, like, one of the things that makes Holy Thursday Mass great, and like you said, Easter Vigil Mass great, is that real like sense of everything being so deeply entrenched in tradition, you know, centuries long tradition. Yeah. And it's those opportunities to do the full bells and whistles that come
for a good reason.
Yeah. Which on a regular Sunday, you're just kind of like, oh my gosh, like, can we just speed this up? You know, or at least maybe that's just me. I don't know. but like, you know, on those high holy days, it's kind of an opportunity to, you know, dust off the old incense and, you know, do the whole nine yards and really feel like there's a meaningfulness to that. And to not have people there all of a sudden, for me, and this is a very subjective thing, and I know some people go the opposite direction, but like, for me, those rituals all of a sudden really ring hollow without like a community there to celebrate.
Totally. Them. No, I think you're right. But it's the heart of it is the community. Doing it all
for some people. I know, like, the ritual is the thing, right? The ritual is the ritual, and it's going to be equally beautiful regardless of who's there to like witness it personally. But I've found that is for me not the case at all. It's just a bunch of people in funny clothes waving their hands around like the freaking magician in Fantasia or something. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know,
it was, I don't know who it was on one of the news programs, but somebody from some Christian faith community. Not Catholic, but speaking about, this will be the first time since like the church began that Easter is not celebrated in community.
Yeah.
You know, like, that is kind of crazy. It's a whole new thing.
Strange. So, time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little rough, but, I, you know, today was probably the easiest day to miss for me because Good Friday, I think you pray the stations on your own or you, you know, if you want to go to church, like, that's fine. Like, there's the Passion Play sometimes and
Passion that Play, kind of thing. Veneration of the Cross or...
That's true. Veneration of the Cross, which is a really weird one. Like, it's we've talked about it before. This is the part where you kiss the cross, everyone. Like, literally, like, cross.
Yes. Yeah. Instead of communion, you go and you go kiss the cross, which is, Good Friday, I just go back and forth on it. Like, I've had great experiences of doing that sort of communal experience of veneration and going and kind of like laying it all sort of at the foot of the cross and in doing so, thanking Jesus for the sacrifice. But I've also had times where I'm like, this is pretty weird. You know, like,
that actually is one that's too weird in community. I think maybe you should do that on your own.
Right. The fact especially that it's become a communal tradition to kiss the cross. Yeah,
I don't love it. And now with all the germ stuff, it'll never come back. But I do like the idea of the quiet time on Good Friday. Like, that's actually an observance that I try to keep and find.
You do the full like 12 to 3 sort of traditional.
If I can, but I think close to that, whatever, you know, like, I mean, I will be honest. I don't think I was quite home at 12, but close to it. Yeah. And just to have that mindfulness, I think, of that time is good.
For sure.
I like that. But it's the fun fact, isn't this the only day that like we don't have mass?
No mass.
Good Friday.
So, and of course, you know, like globally, that's kind of like a rolling time zone sort of a deal, right? But yeah, it is, as far as like a date on the calendar, supposed to be the only one where there's no real celebrations of the liturgy.
Okay.
And so we thought maybe for this episode, we would kind of, since it is Good Friday, that we would take a look at what has become, it's more of like a popular piety sort of a deal, the sort of traditional, the seven words of Jesus on the cross, you know, and they're sort of culled from all the different gospels. But there is something interesting that happens on Good Friday where people look at, you know, in that, those final moments of Jesus's life, what were the words that he said, or at least that the gospel writers attributed to him, right? Because there's different accounts in different gospels and things like that. But we actually thought maybe we would go back even further than that, because the words of Jesus at Holy Thursday are actually pretty feckin' important.
when
it comes to the words of Jesus.
We got a feckin' out of him.
You know, like there's some, always going to be some controversy or some gray area as far as like, what did Jesus actually say and what did Jesus not necessarily say? But when you think about the Last Supper and what Jesus said there, there's some strange things that he said, and the gospel writers seem to be in account in accordance with it. And I was taught in fancy Jesus school that like the stranger it is, or the less sense that it makes, then the better the chances that Jesus actually sort of said it.
Why would they? That's something like the that's like one of the proofs, right? Like
Too so. Weird
that they wouldn't have wanted to include that if they could have picked.
Right, yeah. So we will eventually work our way up to today, Good Friday, but we thought maybe we'd take a step back to yesterday and look at the words of Jesus at the Last Supper. And even that has different accounts, different concepts of what the celebration of the supper, not necessarily what the celebration of the supper was all about, but what happened there. So in some Gospels, there's this story about the washing of the feet. And there's different versions of that and different ways, you know, I forget which gospel it was.
I think it's,
somebody's washing Jesus's feet with her hair in, is that John? That sounds like a John thing.
I feel like that's, I think Matthew has that one too, is the anointing of Bethany, but it might be like before the dinner, like it's not connected to the dinner.
Right.
But that's the first sheet. You know, you'll always have the poor with you, but you won't have me.
I think
the washing of the feet is John, although you would think it would be Luke.
Right.
Things we should have known ahead of time. But
I did look up the words of Jesus for Good Friday, but
okay.
I mean, the interesting about Holy Thursday is like that, you know, so institution of the Eucharist.
Yeah, it is John that has the foot washing.
It is John with the washing feet. Yeah. So there's this idea of, you know, like the fact that Jesus holding up bread and saying, you know, take this. This is my body, you know, breaking the bread, giving it to everybody, like saying, this is me, was a very strange thing and a very odd thing. And yet those are the quote, the one quote from Jesus that we put in every single mass, right?
Yeah.
This is my body and this is my blood. Do this in memory of me. And thousands of years later, we're still doing that. So the idea of Holy Thursday and the Last Supper as the institution of the Eucharist makes a lot of sense, even though some kind of nonsensical words from Jesus at the time.
Yeah, they were extreme words. And I always think in our modern day, it's an interesting contrast that we are not, you know, as Catholics, typically the literal translation of the Bible. But on this point, we certainly are, right? We believe in the real presence. And this is kind of the line that we go to. And then the fundies and friends will say, it's a symbol, and you're like, but if you actually read it, like it's clearly not. And this is one time where our roles are seem to be a bit reversed.
Yeah, totally. And it's, I oftentimes think about that in terms of, you know, putting myself in the place of the apostles and being A, like super freaked out, right? Because what Jesus did right before that was call out, I mean, at least in the gospel accounts, who knows what kind of other conversation was going on at the Last Supper, but calling out Judas as his betrayer, right?
Yeah.
So everybody's kind of like, what the hell just happened, right? And then there's the whole institution of the Eucharist thing, and it's like, what do you mean this is your body? Like, that's just some flatbread, dude, you know? Like,
And remember, they're at a Passover, you know?
Yeah.
At least in Matthew, they're at the actual Passover meal, so it's like, there are actual words that you're supposed to be saying at that dinner. Yeah. And like, here's Jesus being like, here's my version. And everybody's okay, this Aren't is different.
Remembering something else, right? Like, yeah. But it, I mean, that's,
and he's making, yeah, thing. Right. Yeah. So it's a little interesting on that end. I think it's just that night he says so many kind of, like that is such a quotable evening,
yes,
right? From all the gospels, you have the agony in the garden and him like, you know, throwing himself upon the ground,
right,
wanting to get out of it a little bit. Like he's really kind of having his, all his feelings,
right,
the night before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is very human, right? We can understand that.
Last hurrah, right? So there is, you know, like that. That's the way that I often think about it, and the way that I kind of talk to others about it is that, like, you know, if we look at Triduum as that, you know, Paschal mystery kind of played out right before us, right? Life, death, and resurrection. Then Holy Thursday is the life portion of that. That is Jesus hanging out with his friends and giving the final messages. And they don't really understand that it's necessarily going to be the final messages. Although I would imagine they had to have some sort of an inkling after he flipped over all those tables and pissed everybody off.
Yeah. I think them heading into Jerusalem, like from Palm Sunday is heightened to an extreme, right? Like, oh my, like these are, remember, North Country backwoods dudes. And they come down to Jerusalem and it's like, oh shit, like this is kind of happening. Like people are waving and welcoming him. It's a big to do. And then the holy days and stuff's getting a little heated with the Sanhedrin. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm sure they felt the pressure cooker.
Yeah. Tensions were high. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is, so it's Jesus, you know,
they're not in their home turf. Yeah.
A meal with his friends, and really it's the culmination of all of his teachings. And it is, you can tell he's trying to kind of pack it all in there. Right. And there is that intense moment of Eucharistic sharing, right. And saying, you guys have to keep this going. This is my presence that I'm going to give to you. There's the whole service component, right. With the washing of the feet where he takes the towel and he starts to wash all of their funky sandal feet. And, you know, Peter's like, don't, you know, you're not allowed to wash my feet. And he's like, unless you let me do this, like everything you're has out. Been for nothing. Yeah. Like, you know, and then not only do you have to let me do it, but then you have to go and you carry on the tradition, right? So he's giving us messages about service. He's giving us messages about Eucharist. He's giving them messages about like prayer and vigilance in the garden. Like it's so much packed into like that one day.
I think you forgot that he's also giving us like a really strong message about priesthood.
Yeah.
And priests, you know, being like, that's where they came from that night. No, it's not where they came from. I'm sorry. We were, I had to provoke guests a little bit. Just because, but I did want to say, like, I do think he's trying to cram it all in because it's his last moment. Like you can just imagine him being like, this is my last like night with them. I want it to be nice, and I also want to tell them everything that they're going to forget because they're fucking knuckleheads. Like, if that's the message we're going to take about the priesthood, is that you better remind them constantly of what they're meant to do and call them out when they're being fucking betrayers, I'll take that. Is that the message we're supposed to learn?
So for those of you out there, dear listeners, who have never been to a Holy Thursday liturgy, which is a beautiful thing, and it ends with the procession of the Eucharist around the church. It's just it's kind of a really cool, you know, it's not a holy day of obligation, but it's a great liturgical celebration. And yet, just probably, I don't know, maybe a third of the time, if we're being generous, you should really just go to the bathroom during the homily. Like you should just skip out. Because what's going to happen is you're going to have these beautiful readings about the story of the first Passover and how that ties to the story of the Last Supper and Jesus spending time with his friends, teaching them to be servants, teaching them to have this memorial meal in perpetuity. And then the priest is going to get up and talk about how important priests are for anywhere between 5 and 20 minutes about how important the priesthood is, because in addition to a law of the land that depends on service and the institution of the Eucharistic celebration, we also think apparently of the Last Supper as the time when the priests were like instituted, the institution of the priesthood. And so they like to preach about how important the priesthood is. And we're back. So a little technical difficulty, but we were saying that there were so many other opportunities where you could celebrate the institution of the priesthood when Jesus actually said, hey guys, you're the ones who are going to be like doing this. And I mean, I guess that call to service in the washing of the feet is one of those moments. And the institution of the Eucharist is a moment to, you know, be like, this is going to be part of what priests have to do. But like, just let those be for everybody, you know?
Yeah, I think we're all called to serve. I mean, I just think it's such a stretch to say this is the institution of the priesthood.
Right.
It just reduces Jesus' ministry down to just these guys.
Totally.
And that's not the truth of it, you know?
Yeah. In fact, one of the great moments in the accounts, if you're going to incorporate the washing of the feet into that Holy Thursday ritual, is when a complete non-apostle, right? Some woman who, you know, historians and theologians argue over who that woman was and if it was Mary Magdalene or if it was somebody else that comes storming in and, you know, starts to wash Jesus' feet and anoint them and all this kind of stuff. But like, that's a beautiful moment there. And to be like, yeah, but that really, like, that wasn't really part of the plan, because it was really about those 12 dudes, not that woman who came in of her own volition to try to do something beautiful for our Lord.
And in that same scene, Jesus has to scold them and be like, you're missing the point again, guys. Totally. Like, this person actually gets it.
Right.
And you don't get it yet. I mean, once again, we could take that lesson to the priesthood. I don't know. I'm not even meaning necessarily to run down priests in general. Like, I agree that the priesthood should be a sacrament and all that. It's just, it rubs us the wrong way when they want to hold it up with the Eucharist or with this particular event.
When Triduum, which is such an important season, right? If you want to follow what the church says, then these are the three biggest days of the liturgical year. And we're going to start it off with, hey, ain't priests great?
Yeah. This is where we come in.
It's just weird. It's a weird
thing. Yeah, nope. I'm going to say no.
Yeah. So enjoy the ritual and enjoy the beauty of Holy Thursday, but maybe don't get hung up.
Take your bathroom break at the homily. Life tips from guests.
The line of Melchizedek and all that fun stuff that we're going to talk about.
Pull out Melchizedek, dude.
Right? So Holy Thursday comes and goes, and there's this beautiful like Eucharistic celebration, and then that leads immediately into the day where there is no Eucharistic celebration, or there is from something that was consecrated the day before. So there's no real liturgy. There's no liturgy of the Eucharist going on Good Friday. And there's all sorts of different ways to celebrate and honor Good Friday. And we talked about Stations of the Cross the last
episode
that we did. And one of the ways that people kind of honor the celebration of Good Friday is by reflecting on the seven words, they call them, even though it's actually a whole bunch of words, but it's seven sayings,
seven phrases
on the cross. And it's really interesting when you kind of dig into, you know, and again, I think at this point there's not a lot of agreement from one gospel to another in terms of what Jesus said. There's a little bit of agreement in some of the gospels, but everybody has their own spin on it, their own take on it. So it's really about what were the gospel writers trying to say about who this was with that final moment that they are depicting.
This is one of those times when we're really seeing the tilt of each gospel, right? Yeah. Like the audience they're writing to or from is really strong here.
Yeah. So in order, like according to, again, this is not like official, any kind of ritual or celebration. This is sort of something that people have just sort of started to pray on and reflect on over the years. But the order that they usually go in is Luke saying, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do, being early on before Jesus was like in the throes of suffering, I guess, on the cross. And then saying after that, also from Luke, verily I say unto you today, thou shalt be with me in paradise, which was always a lovely one, and now close to our hearts, our little Disney-esque hearts.
That's where we come from.
Yeah, Jesus speaking to the the good thief and the bad thief, the thieves put up alongside him. And then John saying, from the Gospel of John, Jesus says, "Woman, behold your son," and then looks at Mary and says, "Behold," looks at the disciple and says, "Behold your mother." So basically kind of giving the disciple and his mom to one another to be tied together. And then Matthew and Mark both have an account of him saying, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Right. Sometimes it's in English, sometimes it's not in English. Of course, it wasn't in English when Jesus was on the cross, but
no, it's in Aramaic. And actually that is one of the ones that scholars say, you know, it's probably something recorded, because in Mark and Matthew, when they will actually drop in Aramaic instead of Greek, they think those might actually be
trying to refer to like
quotations.
Yeah,
maybe.
And then you have from the Gospel of John, "I thirst," and then of course he's given a drink, and he says, "It is finished." By a drink, I mean like vinegar on a sponge, or some crap like that.
Not cool.
And then the final one being from Gospel of Luke, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." So as you look at them all together, again, even though they're cobbled together from different Gospels, you kind of get an arc of who Jesus was. So I can see why these would be words that people would want to sit on and reflect on together, even though you kind of have to cut and paste to make it all fit from different Gospels. But some interesting insights that you can pull out of that, I think.
For sure. And I think it's interesting because they were, you know, written at different times. Like, it's very much a modern devotion, right? Like, the gospel authors were not like, okay, you cover this and I'll cover that. Like, you know, they each were writing what they thought was a complete enough accounting. So that part I kind of like in terms of like mystery and, you know, taking inspiration today from something that wasn't planned. I think that's kind of cool, like the mystery of it. It does cover such a wide range of who Jesus is. I know when I was in Jesus school back in the day, you know, we talked a lot with these words about like high Christology or low Christology, right? Yeah. Do you think that Jesus was more human or is more divine? And there's the whole gamut represented here, right?
Yeah. I think it's when you think about, you know, like, again, when I reflect on these, I think about the daunting task of trying to write a gospel, right? Mm-hmm. And none of the gospels, as far as we can tell, were written by people who actually spent any time at all with Jesus, right? So for the most part, they're trying to cobble together, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh hand accounts of what was actually going on. And so it's a bit of a writer's dilemma to be like, well, how am I going to capture how significant this moment was? And we talked about that last week with the Stations of the Cross, like God just died on the cross or is about to die on the cross. How do you write that? You know? And so words they choose to show that is really reflective of what the gospel writer is trying to say about the person who is there. And I think that, you know, for me, the ones that always stuck out were the, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? Again, things that don't make sense that don't necessarily like lionize this character anymore, but makes him look vulnerable, makes him look human, makes him look like he's having a crisis of faith, right? Like,
that's
a pretty powerful thing for a gospel writer to include about Jesus, to say like, even the Son of God had a slip up or a falter at the end, you know, same thing can be said about the agony in the garden, right? Like all of a sudden this person who by all accounts in the gospel has a special connection with God starts to have real fear and real doubt and angst creep into that. And who wouldn't, you know, circumstances, but to depict that and to choose not to hide that, I always thought was a really interesting choice.
Well, the suffering has to be real, right? For it all to count. And that's kind of the trick of it, which is, you know, he becomes most human right before he becomes most divine. I know it's heretical. We warned you at the top to speak of him as lesser or more either.
He's always 100% of both. He's the only 200%.
Yes, we know. Don't tell us. We know. Okay? But yet his feelings perhaps are more of the human side. And I think it's actually Mark's gospel that it's the Mark and suffering servant, right, where we see him throwing himself on the ground in the garden as the very extreme depiction of it. And then also the, my God, I know Matthew has it as well, but maybe he copied Mark or whatever.
Right.
It has to be real. And you can just imagine him up to that point thinking, I know what's going to happen, right? Like, I'm aware of my mission, and then experiencing that doubt and just how horrific it would be to have that fear. And yet that's what we tell everyone, right, today when they're going through tough times, is Jesus knows what it's like to, you know, be afraid. Well, yeah, he had to really be afraid then. Like, it had to be real for it to count.
Totally. But, you know, I mean, Mark was all about Jesus kind of as the action hero, right? Like running around and zapping demons and healing people. And it was just like a fast and furious kind of gospel. Yeah. And so the suffering is amplified, you know, like it's a superhero Jesus. And in that crisis, it, you know, the volume gets turned up to 10 at the very end.
Whereas, and it's lonely Jesus, right? Because the disciples are particularly useless in Mark. Like, right. I mean, if we want to talk about the institution of the priesthood, nobody's picking Mark. Like, those guys never get it.
Totally. Like,
they have a real tough time with keeping up.
Well, and Luke is like teacher Jesus, right? Like, always instructing. And so when you just isolate what Luke says that Jesus is doing on the cross, well, he's the one who's forgiving everybody. Father, forgive them. That comes from Luke. And then the two thieves come from Luke saying, well, you know, like, you're going to join me in heaven because you've asked for forgiveness. And then at the end, just saying, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit, right? So it's a very, like, contrasting style.
Right. Here's the instructive Jesus. This is how you should behave, everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Then you get John with this whole, like, Mary and, like,
John,
the preferred disciple, the favorite disciple, the chosen disciple, right? That follows. And I've heard James or John could be that one.
I always heard it was John the beloved, but nobody John the knows. Beloved.
Yeah. Nobody right. Knows. Right. Well, because here's where the James bit creeps in, because there are some accounts of the Gospels that, you know, like both some of the canonical Gospels that mention Jesus having, like, family, right? And I know that that's a hush-hush thing in Catholic circles, that Mary never had any sexy time.
I think you mean cousins.
Right, yes, cousins. but, like, so when you look at the Christian communities immediately after Jesus, like, leading the show kind of in the Holy Land, James, the apostle, takes over for some of that. And there's, so some people think James was an actual brother of Jesus. And so
he's listed as one even somewhere.
Right. And so, like, some people think that maybe Jesus wasn't necessarily doing anything that weird by saying, like, this is your son, like, looking at Mary and saying, this is your son.
Yeah.
And saying, this is your mother, because that may have been true.
I mean, it doesn't seem like he would need to say that, though.
Right.
It seems more of a, like, chosen family symbology style. Like, I'm not going to be there, but, like, hold him as your son and vice versa.
Exactly. But then if it's not, you know, if it's not a literal thing, which, again, would beg the question, why would it be included in the gospel? Then it's like, well, why? Then why, right? Like, why is that important enough to say that this particular, you know, John the Beloved would be like so chosen by Jesus to be, like, his own successor, Mary's son? Like, what an odd thing. But it's John. It's meant to be odd.
I mean, John, yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that we can suppose much outside
John,
of just, like, power. You know, well, this is the Jesus is God from the out the gate is the Gospel of John. And, you know, even his last lines here, it is finished. Like, and Jesus is like, okay, I'm done.
Okay.
I'm done now. I'm God, and I've decided that it's finished. Like, you know, he's always in control.
Yeah. But I do think that by putting Mary and the beloved apostle at the foot of the cross, it does, you know, like, we talked last week for the Stations of the Cross about the fact that Mary was there every step of the way when so many others had abandoned Jesus. And there were others. There were a select few, you know, and one of them being one of the 12 who was there every step of the way. So it does build a scene for who may have been there or what may have been going on at the cross. You know, John being the least historical of all the Gospels, who knows if that's you know, just a symbolic gesture or not. But it does help, like, you know, it's an important scene to build in your mind to go, what was really going on when Jesus was breathing those final breaths? Who was there?
You know, I mean, I would like to think he had friends and family there.
Yeah.
You know, but he wasn't alone.
Yeah. But then you get those, you know, why have you forsaken me? Like, it doesn't get much more alone than that to feel like.
Well, I think he thought it would be done.
Yeah.
Quite quick. And he's like, this is actually rather painful.
Oh, Groom's affection is even worse than I said.
Am I still up here?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. We're sorry. Anyway. All right. Well, let's all have a drink for Jesus on the cross. Yeah, seriously. You poured yourself a libation, dear listener.
Pour one out for our homie.
Pour one out.
Who dies over and over every year. And really, you could say probably every minute of every day somewhere, Jesus is dying a little bit all over again.
Yeah. He could use one. All right. Well, after all that harrowingness, he gets to go in the tomb and everybody's real quiet.
And it gets very quiet. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, and again, they're not the words of Jesus, but the curtain being torn apart and the ground shaking and the heavens opening up and all kinds of things that go real crazy because the whole world is mourning this loss in that moment. But then, let's get them down and let's get them into the tomb because the Jewish laws dictate that we
have a
short amount of time to get this done. And then we have to go back later and do the burial rites in their completion. So
yeah, all this symbolism of dying on Passover, et cetera, requires a bit of a hustle for everybody else to be observant and still take care of business.
Yeah.
You know, we've often talked over the years about like what we think is maybe true or maybe not so true, and Guess is on record for some really crazy things. But I just want to go on record and say I don't ever really buy the whole bit about the earth shaking and all that. Like I think the imagery is beautiful, like the veil being torn. That's a reference to the temple and like where the holies of holies is. But like I just, you know, I don't think anything special happened.
No.
The specialness of Jesus dying.
I think that it was probably from the perspective of the Romans.
Yeah.
From the perspective of most of the Jews of that time, from the perspective of people living on at completely other parts around the world that had never even heard of Jesus and didn't know it. You know, it was any other day. It was just,
I think they had an earthquake in their hearts, his dear friends who watched it happen.
An earthquake in their hearts.
Their souls were shaken. Oh, an earthquake in their hearts. I like that for a chapter title. Good.
So they put him in the tomb and they sock him away and they expect to go back and find him. And we have the benefit of knowing, you know, how that story continues. And I think that will be probably our next episode of Church Trunk is continuing that story and talking about what comes next. So there will be...
For sure.
An Easter week continuation. But like it is, you know, like Good Friday is a time to stop and remember not just the suffering of Jesus, which is what we tend to focus on, but like the suffering of Jesus's friends, the ones who are like, they don't know the end of that story. They don't know what's going on. I mean, hopefully there's a little inkling of that hope in their heart because I can't even imagine how devastating it would be if there wasn't.
I mean, he told them.
Over and over again, he told
many times. Yeah.
And yet, they were pretty dense.
They were often not listening that closely. Yeah.
So, you know, like, take that little inkling, that little bit of Good Friday and go, wow, what if?
Right.
The story didn't have that happy ending that we know and that we use to dictate our lives and, you know, try and find hope in even the darkest of circumstances. Good Fridays for being like, oh, this sucks.
So brutal. Yeah. So brutal. And yet, like, it is the kind of the focal point, right? Like, this is, I guess, Holy Thursday, Good Friday. Like, this is the center of the faith, right? Like, this is the source and the summit. This is the thing that makes us unique. Right. Yeah. Like to find entry point through this brutal death and suffering.
Well, and you can't skip it. You know, that's something that we've talked about before as well, is that you can't just skip Good Friday and fast forward from Holy Thursday straight to, you know, Easter and the empty tomb. Like that I think really is a significant amount of what's wrong with the world right now. not right now in terms of, you know, global.
Right now it's pandemic.
Right, pandemic. That's what's wrong. But in terms of like socially, I think there's a lot of desire to skip Good Friday and to say, well, just give me the reward without any of the suffering. And it doesn't work.
It doesn't work because it's not true to our experience, right? Like this is the problem where you say all suffering is meaningless or to be avoided. And here's this example of it's not meaningless. In fact, it's very meaningful, and it's usually meaningful in our own lives too, right? Yeah. That if you try to avoid suffering, usually just more suffering comes instead of a resurrection. Like the only way out is through.
Right. Whereas if you at least in, I can only speak for my own experience, but like if I pause and I take a step back and I look at how many resurrections and how many like beautiful free gifts I have already been given without needing to suffer, like what a charmed life I live. Totally. And so then what a bastard I am during those few times when I actually am asked to take on some suffering. And I try to skip it, you know, and I just try to be like, oh, let me take the easy way out, you know, and I do it. We all do it, you know.
Totally.
Like, I've already been given so many free passes that maybe a little suffering would do me good.
Wow. I mean, that is very noble of you. I don't have
that mindfulness at all times, right? It's when
it's sometimes it's hindsight or foresight or whatever, but I think you have to hold both things, right? That like it's suffering is not really to be avoided. I mean, not that we should have unnecessary suffering, but like you should accept.
Totally.
Try to like put it in its proper place, what comes your way. But at the same time, like suffering sucks. Like, and even though you've had a charmed life, like it doesn't diminish the pain of your suffering. Like that's kind of part of what suffering is, you know? And I think sometimes that's also the temptation for people to say, oh, like I have no business feeling that I'm suffering because I have a charmed life. And it's like, well, maybe you don't have any business not being grateful for your charmed life, but your suffering still is suffering, and suffering it sucks. Ask Jesus. So
I do think that, you know, for you and I both,
you need like, both. Yeah.
Embedded in our personal theologies that, you know, like you walk that pathway, you get, you have life and that's, you know, things are humming right along. And then you get a monkey wrench thrown in that and you have that little bit of Good Friday. And then you kind of power through that and you find the resurrection moment. And sometimes by power through that, I mean, years worth of powering through, you know, and processing things.
Lots of vodka.
Yeah. But it's noble work.
I thirst.
Yeah, right. I thirst.
it's noble work.
On a sprig of hyssop.
You were just on fire with the words today. Melchizedek and hyssop. Well done. And I think it also just reminds us like what marshmallow people we are, because you're right. Like we have like little Good Fridays and
yes,
but like you know you hear about people whose whole life. Yeah. It's like a Mark gospel, you know, it's like 16 chapters and 12 of them are the passion.
Right.
And you feel bad because like yours isn't that way.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, I think part of what we have and part of what draws us into this whole like Paschal mystery thing is that the measuring stick of suffering is always us, not even necessarily against Jesus, but like with Jesus, knowing that like the suffering of Jesus is for us all and with us all. And so even if you've led a life that's pretty damn, you know, peachy, and you don't need to say, well, have I suffered more or less than some of my other brothers or sisters? It's really about that we all suffer and that we share in that in some way, shape or form, because it is hard, you know, given the disparity of the world that we live in, to see people who live in, you know, a true state of what I would say is like suffering And yet when you look at, you know, the happiness indexes of different countries,
totally.
The index of some of the poorest countries in the world is the highest. And the people who are the richest are oftentimes making their own lives miserable for themselves and others, you know, like, so it's not, I think that what we get with Good Friday is just the ability to kind of like let go of hopefully some of that navel gazing and not be like, well, is my suffering better or worse than other people's suffering? Am I suffering enough to have it count? You know, like it just, it is what it is.
That's not helpful.
During those times in our lives when we do suffer, which sometimes is a lot and sometimes it's a little, we're right there with Jesus at the cross. Yeah. And that gives us a place to be and a little box to put that in. And Lord knows that what you and I need is a box to put our suffering in.
I sure like a box. I'll put a label on it. I'll tuck it on a shelf.
Put a lid on it and lock it up. Yeah, label it and then just tuck it way deep down in there.
Walk it downstairs. Where it'll
never come back.
down to the basement of my soul. Well, cheers
to it. Is. Happy Good Friday, everybody.
I think we've hit a peak Good Friday.
I love that even though you and I are doing this as like a video conference, we both like raise our glass to cheers. Like I almost actually just hit my computer screen with a can of beer.
Dude, too bad it's only a can. Like if your computer screen like got like a little ding in it from you like drunkenly toasting me, I would be so pleased.
Oh man. All right. Well, I think that
over.
Well wraps up our Holy Thursday and Good Friday episode, and we head to an e-vigil of some sort tomorrow. Sure. We're up for it, or maybe just Sunday morning. But we hope that you guys have enjoyed the Lenten journey with us all the way up here to Good Friday, out there, dear listeners.
Yeah.
And if you have any feedback or anything that you would like to hear us address in the coming Eastertide season, messages of hope and whatnot, then feel free to hit us up. You can always tweet me at churchdrunkpod.
You can email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Hit us up on the blog, on the website, churchdrunk.com. We'll be posting all of our podcasts, and we've got the Stations of the Cross playlist there. And cocktail recipes and whatnot. So feel free, let us know what you think and what you want to hear in the coming days, weeks, months. Yeah. Who knows how long we're going to be doing this over video conference remotely, but
oh my gosh,
we'd love to hear from you and give us some ideas.
How are you hanging in there in this time of social distancing? Let us know.
Yeah. And we'll catch you on the other side of the empty tomb here on Church Drunk, where all of our Fridays are Good Fridays.
Amen.
Cheers.
Cheers. Peace.